I'll give you a little bit more in depth about kind of who we are and why Lubbock and all. It really starts with, I don't know that I need to do this, but it really starts with the story I told downstairs. And in 2006, we decided to go for this deal. We inducted our first class, and the first class, I wrote them down so I wouldn't forget them, but the first class had five coaches and five players in it. Coaches were Rod Dato, USC. Interesting thing about Rod Dato, and it's something you just touched on, Rod Dato always claimed for himself that he was the head coach of the 1948 USC team, but one that I'm going to talk about in a second, but he wasn't the head coach, he was an assistant. I suspect that he was the assistant who did a lot of the work and a lot of the baseball details, but the head coach was a guy named Sam Barry. And I thought about what you were saying earlier, and I thought college baseball sort of dealt with that at the highest level. I did an oral history with the guy who was involved at the NCAA record keeping for a long time, and he always fought with Dato over, no, you weren't the head coach. Well, I did all the work. Well, still, you weren't the head coach. Anyway, Cliff Gustafson from University of Texas, who coached Roger Clemens. Bobby Winkles really built the Arizona State program. Skip Burtman at LSU and Ron Frazier of Miami. Were the five coaches, the five players, Dave Winfield, Robin Ventura, see an OSU shirt, Bob Horner, Brooks Kieschnick, and Will Clark. And that was the first 10, and it's blossomed from there. I think we're at about 85 inductees over nine classes. In 2011, we added an umpire recognition. In 2013, we added a coach recognition, a Coach of the Year award that can be given to any coach at any level of college baseball, Division I, II, and III, NAIA Junior College, Division I, II, and III. And then we're one of the things that we're going to do, reasonably sure, I keep saying pencil it in, I'm going from here to the Astros game to sit down with Reed Ryan. It may take 5 minutes to have this conversation, but just to update him on where we are with this, but we're creating the George H.W. Bush Award. And it's the formal name is George H.W. Bush Distinguished Alumnus Award, but it's basically what you just, another one of the lists that you were just talking about, Carl, the college baseball letterman who went on to do great things. Has nothing to do with the quality of them as a player. Has everything to do with what they did after. It's been a couple of years. I think I told you this, Carl. I sent an email out to the college baseball universe as best we know it, SIDs, coaches, whatnot, at all levels, and said, who are your most famous alumni? Not interested in necessarily, you know, who are the great players? You know, I don't need the University of Texas to tell me about Roger Clemens. I'm more interested in the guy who went on to cure cancer or whatever. You know, that kind of thing, the kind of thing we're talking about. And of all of the things that we got back, and there was a lot that we knew about and a lot that we didn't, but one of the more interesting ones was, I think the SID, I'm saying SID, Sports Information Director, Media Relations Person, I think it was at the University of Washington, said that a guy who played here in the 19-teens had gone on to become a doctor and invent Tylenol. So there's maybe some cool trivia. I haven't confirmed that, but the guy who invented Tylenol played college baseball at the University of Washington. So if you don't learn anything else at Sabre this weekend. I talked a little bit about the fundraising and the project. We're planning about a 30,000-square-foot building with a ballpark in it. And I don't want to say stadium. I want to say more field. It may seat 1,000 people, 1,500, but we're really interested in having that to be sort of a focal point for a lot of what we need to do to generate tourism. We know that, there's no perfect place for this, and we're going to put it there, and we know it's not going to be across the street from Disney World. This is in Orlando. We know that. And so key thing is 250,000 people live there, and it's a big deal to them when we do stuff in late June, early July every year. We also know we're going to have to create our own tourism, and so we can utilize youth tournaments and things like that to drive traffic to the building. $4.2 million in the bank. There's another couple million committed, and we really are gunning for about another $6 million to really get the thing built and endowed. And because the last thing we want is to get the thing up and running for a year and then falter. And believe me, it keeps me up at night because this is hard, like I said downstairs. But it's going good, and you know, progress is never fast enough, but we're excited about it. Needless to say, it's real validation when a president of the United States sends you a letter and says, hey, this is great, I'm honored, you know, and kind of spells out that we've already inducted several of his heroes, number one of which was Lou Gehrig. And so, you know, it's validation, certainly. With regard to the College World Series, I think it's important, and I don't know where your knowledge level is on this, so I hope I'm not delivering a third grade level lecture to a bunch of college kids or whatever, but hopefully there's some nuggets of information here that are interesting to you. 1947 was a very important year in college baseball. Not only, I'm sure it was just in the post-World War II kind of euphoria that not only was the coaches, were the coaches able to associate and really create what is the predecessor of today's American Baseball Coaches Association, but also then create the first, or recognize the first All-American teams and then create the first College World Series. That first College World Series was essentially a champion of the East versus a champion of the West and a best two out of three series in Kalamazoo, Michigan. The four teams met in the East were, I had to write this down because I knew I'd get into this and forget one of them. I can usually do it off the top of my head. It was Yale and Clemson and NYU and University of Illinois. And they just played a single elimination. They came to New Haven. They played it at Yale. And the winners advanced and played the next day, and the winner of that went on to Kalamazoo, and the losers got on the bus or the train or whatever and went home. But Yale had a great pitcher named Frank Quinn. After the 1948 World Series, he signed with the Red Sox for $50,000. He was their ace. And what I've come to recognize about this team, and President Bush was part of this class of guys that were obviously GI Bill, you know, World War II. They all came through together, played 46, 47, and 48, finished second both years in the World Series, and I'll get to that in a minute. But in 49, the Yale program didn't hardly have a name that was recognizable from the 48 team, and they finished with a losing record. So this group of guys that went through together, with Bush being one of them, was really led by Quinn. They had a lot of, I don't want to diminish, because they had several guys play minor league baseball and professional baseball, but Quinn was the guy. And he was the one that matched up and beat Clemson in the semifinal of that East Championship, and they beat NYU and went to Kalamazoo. In the West, University of California and University of Denver played, and Texas and OU played. Texas beat OU in one semifinal, Cal beat Denver in the other. They meet in the finals. Cal beats University of Texas 8-7. Now, here's the significance of that, or the interesting part of that. The losing pitcher for the University of Texas in that game was Bobby Lane. Went on to be a great quarterback, as you know. The winning pitcher in that game for Cal was really their best player, and it was Jackie Jensen. And Jackie Jensen, when I talked to done an oral history with her, I don't know what you want to call it, an hour-long interview. I'm not sure what the difference between an hour-long interview and an oral history is, other than I asked for birth dates and, you know, full names and stuff, so that makes it more of an oral history. But I've talked to pitchers from each of Yale and Cal, and asked them both how many of the guys on your team had fought in World War II, and the vast majority of them had, for both teams. And that makes sense why they would be one of the better teams, because they were probably more 22, 23-year-old mature players, mature guys. But Jackie Jensen was the freshman, straight out of high school. He was a great athlete, playing on the football team, and probably the best hitter on the team. He pitched out of the number two hole, but he was a thrower. He was a hard thrower. You know, he was the rocket-armed right fielder. But he got the win in that game. If you remember, Jackie Jensen had a terrible, he didn't want to fly. And they flew from Denver when they won that. They flew from Denver to Kalamazoo. And the veterans all talked about, the older guys on the team talked about having to like lasso Jensen and get him on the plane, because he had no interest in flying. But they fly in. I asked I'm referring to an oral history from Yale, and it's with sadness that I tell you this, but the guy I talked to was a guy named Jim Duffus, D-U-F-F-U-S. And he had pitched this, you had emailed me the obituary. I talked with him in December, and there's only two or three living guys that I think are in a position to really get on the phone and talk and have a lot of memories from each of those two teams. And Duffus had told me that I asked him about what was the train ride like from New Haven over to Kalamazoo, and he said, well, I don't remember much. He said, but Poppy Bush had the rummy game that we all wanted to play. And he called him Poppy. I mean, there was no, he didn't say, well, you know, George, I mean, he never made one reference to him as George Bush in that oral history. And we've heard that. I mean, if you read much about that, you knew that the guys at Yale and all called him Poppy Bush. But when I would find a reference in the student newspaper, it was Poppy Bush, whether he was playing on the soccer team, playing first base, whatever it was, Poppy Bush, Poppy Bush. So that part has been very much confirmed. But they get to Kalamazoo, and it's essentially one game on one day. It's like a high school playoff series here in the state of Texas. It's the best 2 out of 3. You play one game on Friday and 2 games, if necessary, on Saturday. And I'm not sure about it being Friday or Saturday, but they go in there and have a practice day, and then they play. And the key to Yale's success was going to be Frank Quinn, and Quinn's beaten Cal 4-2 going into the seventh inning. He's kind of doing his thing, and Cal ties it up with 2 in the 7th. They take the lead with 2 in the 8th, and then I think Quinn ran out of gas, and they take him out and put the rest of their pitching staff in, which wasn't very deep once you get past Duffus. The final score was 17-4, so it was a bad ninth inning. It was a bad ninth inning for the next day they come back and Mr. Duffus, Jim Duffus, pitches this game. And Duffus told me about some color footage from this game that his father got in a car, Rochester, New York, drove over to Kalamazoo and shot it. You all probably seen when it was a game, you know, the color footage of guys that you never used to see in color. And it's you know, what he's describing to me, it sounds like that, but he this footage is of him pitching against Cal, and they get down big, they scrap back and tie it up at 7-7 off of Jensen, who's out there throwing really hard, and debatable whether he knows where it's going. They bring in a left-handed pitcher named Virgil Butler. Cal does, and he was kind of a lanky left-hander, and he was the oral history I did on the Cal side. He throws 4 scoreless innings, and they find a way to get a run off of Yale and beat him 8-7. Happy Chandler was in Kalamazoo, Michigan for that series, and that was a big deal in terms of him speaking on the field before and after the games and presenting trophies, and the umpires were Major League umps, and they sent – I've seen the names, but they it was – yeah, they treated them, you know, they treated the baseball treated this thing well. 48, they come back this next year, same format. And I had asked Mr. Duffus, let me go back to 47. I had asked him, did you guys go into the season, because this was a new thing. You know, every college baseball player, junior college guy, Division I junior college guy knows we're wanting to go to Grand Junction. Division I team wants to go to Omaha. Everybody knows that. I said, well, did you guys start the season knowing, okay, there's a new World Series thing and we want to play in it? And he didn't recall knowing about that. And his coach, Ethan Allen, was one of the guys who was kind of instrumental in setting this thing up and with that coaches association and making it happen. But he didn't recall knowing anything about it until they had won kind of you and I would call the Ivy League, but whatever that conference championship was with Harvard and those guys in it. And then there was a point at which, hey, fellas, if we win this, we get to go play in a College World Series thing. So anyway, they start the 1948 season. They obviously know about it. Then this is Bush and all those guys, Quinn, Duffus, all of that group's senior year. Same thing, 4 teams in the East, 4 teams in the West, Yale and North Carolina, Lafayette and Illinois are the teams in the East. But this year it's a double elimination deal. It's kind of a 3-day double elimination tournament. In the West, it was USC and Baylor, Oklahoma A&M, and Colorado State, which we now know as Northern Colorado. And they play the best 2 out of 3, and Yale rolls through the East undefeated and wins their thing with Frank Quinn beating North Carolina in a very close, well-pitched first game. And then USC rolled through their deal and beat Baylor to get to College World Series. So the same thing, they go back, and this is the College World Series that I had mentioned about, that Sam Berry was technically. I think Sam Berry is one of like four guys to have coached in the Final Four in the College World Series. And that's what Dana was sort of telling us when he said I was the head coach of that team, because Barry may have been the basketball coach. And, you know, Dana puts him through all the workouts and writes up the lineup and coaches third and does all the baseball stuff, and Barry shows up and you know, make sure the bus is leaving on time. But anyway, but Barry, they get to Kalamazoo. Yale goes back the next year. Yale knows that this is all of their guys' last run at this thing, and it's the same format, best two out of three, two teams. Yale pitches it backwards, is what we affectionately call it. But you hear people, a lot of people around college baseball, basically they start their number two pitcher in the first game, and then they're going to pitch their number one pitcher in the second game. Same thing, they're going to play one game one day, two games the second day if necessary. USC had a pitcher, I think, named Wally Hood. I think he was a left-handed pitcher. He's been on the Hall of Fame ballot a few times. I think he was an 18-game winner that year. Really outstanding. And they've got a real distinct advantage on game one. Duffus told me that that Ethan Allen had pitched Frank Quinn, wanted to pitch him in game two of the series, in game one of the doubleheader the next day, because he thought it might be necessary for him to go start both games of the doubleheader, because he felt like Quinn could beat him in the first game the next morning, and then we'll see what he's got left. Because Yale, as they were the year before, really, really dropped off after the first two pitchers. So Yale's pitching this first game backwards. Number two pitcher goes out and throws seven scoreless innings. It goes to the bottom of the eighth. Yale's winning 1-0. And again, the man I'm talking about is Jim Duffus, the guy who passed away in around July 4th or earlier this month. But you know, they're about to pull a major upset and then have a tremendous advantage the next morning because Frank Quinn was going with the, you know, all he had to do was beat USC and win it. They have an injury. There's something fluky. I've heard different reports about it, but Yale, and they didn't play as many games as they did, so a backup catcher really wasn't necessary the way it would be now. You'd kill a kid to run him out there 56 games in a college season, but Yale had pretty much played one catcher all year. Kid gets hurt, bangs a finger, something happens, and backup catcher comes in, and as the way baseball is, the ball finds him twice. He makes two errors, and USC scores three runs. So now USC's up 3-1. They go to the top of the ninth, Yale's last at bat. Yale gets a leadoff single, a walk, and then another little single through the left side, and so they've loaded the bases, top of the ninth, no outs, down 3-1. You can imagine, this is getting serious. Of course, Hood's still in the game. You didn't have relief pitchers back then the way you do now. Backup catcher's up. And again, I told you the backup catcher's never played. I don't know if he's even had the bat. So Ethan Allen pulls the trigger on a pinch hitter, kind of a spare outfielder, but a kid who had played a little bit. Duffus described me as a guy he could really run. And the guy bangs, pitch just a one-hopper right back to the mound. And so they do the old 1-2-3 double play. Boom, you know, catcher to first. And well, Yale had an All-American who started at second base, and I mean, he was the base runner at second base when this play started. I think it was Red Matthews. Matthews takes off for third, and he gets to third and kind of takes a big, what I would call, as someone who's coached a lot of high school kids, a big old sloppy turn at third base. And the USC first baseman takes the throw from the plate and then fires across the diamond and back picks the guy at third. And so they've had a 1-2-3-5 triple play, and that just ended the first game of the 1948 College World Series. Now, the legend behind it, and it's not legend, it's fact, because I've seen the box scores, but, you know, the thing that President Bush talked about years later was the fact that he was on deck when that happened. And it probably made for good presidential conversations with guys who love baseball like he did. And I think Rod Dato had reconnected with President Bush and probably said a lot of stuff that was overly flattering, like, you're the best player we ever played against. You know, well, Bush described himself as a good field, light hit or no hit first baseman, so he probably wasn't the best player they'd ever faced or whatever it was. But as legend has it, the first baseman's mitt that he played with at Yale was in his desk drawer in the Oval Office. And you know, probably like an old ball player when he's sitting in there in the middle of the night or whatever, pulled it out and put it on and, you know, banged around on it. And that mitt is now in 41's Poppy Bush's library up in College Station, which for those of you who aren't Texans, about an hour and a half north of here. But back to the 48 World Series, they come back the next day. Quinn goes out and beats USC that morning. So you think about it, they were kind of a triple play away from maybe winning the 1948 College World Series. Quinn beats them that morning 8-3, but then he runs out of gas and they lose the final 9-2 And so Yale's gone to Kalamazoo 2 years in a row, lost both years. USC has won the first of the most College World Series championships of any school. They haven't been more times. University of Texas has been more times. But USC dominated all through the 60s and 70s, and so they're the ones that have the most titles. I think, is there any questions about that or anything else? I told Carl going in that I was going to try to do about 10 minutes, and because I don't want to hijack the meeting. But I would be happy to answer any questions if you have anything about that.
You said in 47 that the Western semifinals that was played in Denver?
Yeah, and I think it was at Mile High. And actually in 47 and 48 it was played in Denver. At 47 the Eastern one was played at New Haven at Yale, and 48 it was played at Winston-Salem. I assume it was in the minor league park that later became Mile High Stadium, well, but you would know
it. It just opened that year.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was early in the spring. I don't know if it was open yet. Mm-hmm. I can check around for you, though.
You know, this is one of the things I've done. Where I got most of this, I went to Texas Tech, which is just a couple miles from my office, and I'm an alumnus, and went to the library and on interlibrary loan and said, "Give me the June order." Said, "I'm sure the only place in the world that has this is the Kalamazoo Library, but." Basically send me the June 47 and the June 48 microfilm, and got a lot of primary source stuff for those two World Series. Just got through maybe 2 weeks ago with the 1949 Wichita newspaper from June. And really, I'm not going to run through this thing chronologically and do all that, but I think Omaha's done a very good job with Omaha's part in the College World Series, which started in 1950. And I've always thought, you know, 47, 48, 49 are kind of interesting. So 49 is the next frontier. All I've done is just go through the newspapers and clicked them all over to PDF the little gizmos that they used back when we were in school. You put a nickel in and you hit the print button. And that's PDF. But go ahead. Yeah, I've got them. I mean, I've downloaded them out of those newspapers. Sure.
I'm from Illinois.
Yeah. Sure. I lived in Tolono for 2 years as a kid. Here's what I don't have. I don't have the box scores from those Eastern and Western championships that Illinois, the only thing I have are from the College World Series. So I've got the scores, but I don't have maybe some line scores. Sure. Yeah, sure. Yes, sir.
The thing is, it was at Kalamazoo in two series because Western Michigan also had a great baseball program. A lot of people didn't know, and still don't.
Is it pronounced Himes?
H-Y-A-M? Yes.
And I know that in the newspaper.
That was Himes Field. Yeah.
And I know that there was a guy named Judge Himes, and so I'm not very smart, yeah. But I figured that Judge Himes had a lot to do with getting the thing there and the field named after him. So
yeah. I have a database, an Excel spreadsheet of all the microfilm listings that have been found about mentioning baseball from 1960.
I'd love to see. I'd love to see something about.
I have a primary source there that's probably the most knowledgeable about the baseball in these areas. I can check this into.
I'd love to know more about the Bobby Lane game.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Thank you.
I'll leave that recorder on.
No, we can.